Hello everybody, selamat sejahtera from Malaysia, tachahau, welcome everyone. I will learn more Malaysian greetings in the future, yeah? So this is your girl, AG. Welcome back to 2021. You're listening into the Sambal Pod, a Malaysian youth-based podcast where we talk about anything that screams youths. Basically, anything about youths. About how inspiring our Malaysian youths can be, about so many social issues, or any issues that youths nowadays should take attention upon. We are here to give our thoughts about it. Who are we? We are also a group of Malaysian youths, a group of crazy university students, where we just want to share our thoughts about what the youths think about what the world is today. So yeah, if you are curious to hear our thoughts, tunggu apa lagi? Tune in! Welcome back to the Sambal Pod, a Malaysian youth-based podcast where we talk about anything related to the youth. So yes, this is the first episode for 2021. So yes, to those listening in, Happy New Year. Let's just hope that 2021 is a better year than 2020, yeah? That's the only thing I'm expecting for now. And yeah, usually, you know, just a bit of a sidetrack. Usually, I'm someone who loves to plan things so much. So usually, like the end of 2019, 2018, I'll be like busy thinking about, you know, my plans for the next year. It's going to be like, you know, a big year for me and stuff like that, right? But I don't know, maybe because of the uncertainties of this pandemic, I just don't feel like I have the time. And maybe because I'm busy with my exams and all too, right? So like, I just feel like I don't have the time to think of New Year resolutions. Or maybe I'm just not bothered about it. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, you guys can tell me whether you have thought about your New Year resolutions or stuff like that. And for those who don't also, you guys who don't bother to think about it, no worries. Because we can make resolutions any time of the year. It doesn't have to be January 2021. So yeah, let's just hope 2021 is a good year for all of us. And yeah, back to our topic. I have a very interesting topic. To be honest, this is one of the topics where I'm really clueless about what am I going to say. Because I am someone so clueless about this entrepreneurship kind of thing. So yeah, we're going to talk about the rise in social entrepreneurship. That's our topic today. And you know, for me, when you talk about entrepreneurship, I mean, sorry, when you talk about social entrepreneurship, the only thing I can think of is that I find that people kind of opt to do social entrepreneurships more now. Like, you know, when they want to start a business. I don't know, maybe this is like my lousy observation, lah, yeah? But I feel that a lot of people, you know, I feel like social entrepreneurships are becoming really popular and trendy nowadays. So yeah, don't listen to me. Let's bring on the expert to talk about this. So yes, we have this amazing big boss of Serum Initiative. So yeah, please introduce yourself.
Yeah, hello everyone. Thank you so much for having me here. So yeah, for you guys who don't know, I'm Shaikit from Serum. So just a quick like kind of like background about myself. I've been in the social impact scene for the past 4 years. So other than, you know, founding Serum as a social enterprise, I'm also heavily involved in the NGO scene as well. Currently, I'm the COO of Nation Building School, a youth development NGO, youth-led, and then for youths as well. On the other end, I'm also the co-director of impact and research at the Malaysian Social Project. So we are a pro bono consulting organization for the third sector, you know, like NGO and social enterprises. So yeah, so just a little bit more, I guess right now I'm wearing the Serum hat. So I'm going to talk a little bit more, you know, about what Serum is, right? So Serum actually typically it started off as an initiative to provide hygiene kits for the underserved communities like refugees, urban poor and rural poor during the beginning of MCO, you know, back in April. And now we are actually expanding our, you know, initiative all the way to the buy and impact model, where we aim to become a platform that sells impact-driven product. So each of the product you purchase with Serum, there's always a clear and transparent impact behind it. So since, just a little bit statistics here, since Serum's founding back in April, we've impacted more than 19,000 people. So provided more than 400,000 face masks and also more than 2.3k liters of hand sanitizers as well. And of course, we are hoping to, you know, continue this great effort along the year as well.
Okay, wow, 19,000 people, guys. That is not a small number. Wow.
yeah, I mean, and considering like, it's since April, I think that's something that we are very much proud of. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's so inspiring to hear all the different hats that you hold. I didn't know that you had this much of, you know, this much of commitments that you hold, to be honest. And it's just like, wow. I mean, I just know that you were part of the Malaysian National Building School, but I didn't know about the other stuff. So I was like, wow. And Serum, of course. So I'm like, wow. I mean, like, what else don't you not do? So yeah, it's really inspiring to see the work you do for the youth, especially since we are like a youth-based podcast, right? So yeah, it's just really, really inspiring to see that. But yeah, before we go on, yeah, you really deserve the credit. So yes, before we go on to the, you know, to all the other stuff and to know more about this amazing initiative that you guys have called Serum, I'm just going to ask some random questions now. So yeah, you ready for it?
Yep, of course. All good.
Okay, cool. So I don't know why this is the first question, but okay. Don't get too surprised. What is your definition of evil? It's so random, I know.
Yeah. Very interesting, actually. I think my definition of evil is where things that socially we can't accept. You know, like what is good and what is bad, right? It would be something that justified by the society you're in. So for example, if you are in, let's say in Malaysia, what's right and wrong could be different when you're in, for example, in the Western countries. So I think what's evil, it fully depends, the definition will depends on the, like a social contract, I guess.
Okay. Wow. I did not expect, you know, such a ready answer, because usually when I ask, people are all like hesitating and then you just get me an answer.
A bit, right?
Wow. This is so nice to know. Okay. Interesting. Okay. And so second question would be, what do you love and hate about Malaysia?
Oh, wow. What do I love and hate about Malaysia? I think one thing I will say it out loud, and I hope the listeners are not like going to hate me for it, but at certain times it's the food. You know, for me, I definitely love the diversity, the food that we have here. But at the same time, I'm really, really terrible at spicy food. And in Malaysia, there are a lot of the delicious food, right, that's actually spicy as well. Okay. And, you know, I'm always the one that being left out in that equation. And I always have to order something that's less spicy. If not, I'm going to sweat, like, really, really a lot. So, yeah, I think that's a love-hate relationship is where at times I have to prevent it. At times I opt in for it and then I regret it immediately. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of love-hate relationship there.
Okay. Okay, cool. I mean, I was really surprised when you said food. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly.
How could a Malaysian say that, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I knew that, you know, especially for Malaysians to hear that, everyone would get triggered. But, you know, it's for good reason. You know, it's for my, you know, my inability to actually take spicy food. So, yeah, that's on me.
To be honest, you don't have to feel alone because me, despite my race that you obviously know, I myself can't accept the spices as well. I honestly cannot. I really cannot tahan spicy food, which is why I do enjoy lah, like, you know, some Malay and Indian food, which is usually more to the spicy side, right? But then I enjoy it at the risk. Yes, I usually exactly. enjoy it while crying sometimes. It gets so terrible. So like, I usually make a fool of myself lah. So yeah,
I can really relate.
It's so nice. I mean, usually most of the people that I know usually don't have problems with spicy food. So yeah, it's nice to meet another fellow gang.
Same here, exactly.
Okay, so okay, your third question is gonna be, what is your worst regret? Wow, okay, yeah.
What? Wow, that's deep. That's really deep. I think that would take time to sink in and all, right? But I guess my deepest regret, I guess typically it would be especially when I was in university, I think there are a lot of things I could have done earlier, you know, the exposure or, you know, and joining kind of initiatives, not just within university, even out of university. I think one of the biggest regret, at least on my recent years in a way, right, is that I did not push myself to go out earlier. I consider myself very lucky for the fact that, you know, I was able to explore a lot of things within the university life, okay. But things could have been earlier. And I think that's my deepest regret. And hence, which is why right now, any kind of like juniors who I came across, right, I always give them the exposure. Like, you know, things are not just within, you know, university or within university itself. There's a lot to explore. But let's look at these are the initiatives. These are the, you know, opportunities you can see out of university as well. How to explore it and what are the channels to, you know, to go for it. So I think because that became like my regret, hence right now I'm trying to make sure that it's not the regret of my, you know, juniors as well.
Okay. I mean, what you said really wow. I mean, like, these questions were supposed to be chill, you know, but then I really appreciate your answer, because what you said really resonated with me, because I am a uni student, right? And I feel that, you know, I think I have this dilemma thinking of should I go for more, you know, more involvement in other stuff that I really want to do. But then the dilemma is like my academics, because obviously for me, my academics is always number one. So I'm really scared mm-hmm. that, you know, whether you can maintain those pointers and stuff like that while doing all these other things. So yeah, I mean, like what you said just really resonated so much.
Something. Let me just throw in one thing, right, is that okay. I always believe in the idea that, you know, it's not just about work smart, but why not both work hard and work smart, right? Because, you know, when I founded my first social enterprise, which is tech-based social enterprise, right? Okay. I was still in my final year. And, you know, during that time, it was really, really tough, definitely. And I was joining accelerator program while managing my final year project and so on, right? But okay. That semester was the only semester throughout my degree life that I got a 4 flat. And then in the accelerator program, it was very successful on our end as well. So that's why I felt like, you know, that became a huge reference to me, saying that, you know, those things are very much possible. You just need to, you know, be smart and be working hard towards it. You know, and I hope to put that as an example for everyone out there as well, so that they can, you know, that wouldn't be an excuse for everyone. You know, everyone can do it as well.
Okay. Wow, that was like a bit of like a virtual slap in my face. No, because this was something I was thinking about for, you know, for a while. So yeah, I'm really glad to actually talk about this, even though this was not planned.
Yeah, I'm glad you should be sharing this as well.
Okay, thank you so much. And yes, your last question is, what age do you wish you could permanently be?
Oh, wow. I think I would choose maybe at the age of 32. Maybe that's the number that came to my mind in the first place.
I guess the reason is, may I know your age?
right now I'm 25. So okay. Yeah. So it's like about 7 years from now. I think one of the reasons why I opt for that age is that, you know, during the age you are still able to be active, you're still able to, you know, strive for more. But at the same time, you know, for me, my experience in founding you know, startup and social enterprises in early age, right? I face a lot of comments saying things like, hey, you know, we want youth in this scene. But at the same time, when we start talking about, you know, financial support, suddenly they will say things like, I love your idea, but I'm not sure whether you have the experience to execute it or not. Or, you know, things like, you know, your age might not be the prime time for you to do this. You know, they need something more, someone more senior and so on. hence, maybe that prompts me to kind of feel like if I were older, maybe the perspective might be different. Yeah.
I mean, like, I'm so sorry for me to say this, but I feel like whoever who said that to you, they really suck. I mean, like, no. I really understand where they're coming from, because I guess for them, it's really unusual to see someone so young doing these kind of things. Mm. But then, yep. I don't know. I mean, like, since you're already doing it, why don't just give a leap of faith? What's wrong in believing the youths? Like, you know, today's Malaysian youths are doing so many amazing things, and you are, like, one of the examples. So, yeah, I mean, like, I kind of understand why, but okay. I mean,
it takes time, I guess. Yeah, it takes time for everyone to further understand, you know, how youth can play a power in it. I think we can't change this overnight, but I guess it takes little efforts by every one of us, setting as example, giving good results and all these things to, you know, to show them that, you know, it's possible. Yeah.
Okay. I do agree. And yeah, that is actually so true. So yeah, I don't know, is it because you're so used to all these check-in questions or stuff, but you answer really well. You're probably like, no, honestly, I mean, like, you're probably like one of the fastest people who, yeah, I think you're probably one of our fastest guests who actually finish this check-in question sesh. So yeah, good for you.
Yeah, great. I'm glad to hear that. And I hope I'm not the one who talks too much as well. I hope it's just enough of the content, right?
No worries. I feel that I love people who talk a lot. So no worries. And I honestly enjoyed all the points that you discussed. So yeah, I can't wait to hear more when we go on to our actual topic today, which is social entrepreneurship. But before going on to this, to that segment, I just want to ask you one more question. I don't know whether I want to be in your head for the whole day, but just give all of us 5 minutes, like, okay, for a chance to be in your head, okay? I don't know whether your head is a very stressful place or how, I don't know, with the terms of commitments you have. But then, we want to know, what are the thoughts that ran in your head when you decided to start up Serum? You know, like, did you suddenly wake up, or was it like an idea in the shower? You just realized that, okay, you know what? Let's start this and let's impact Malaysia. So like, yeah, how was it for you?
Yeah, I think definitely it's, for me, it's not like as exciting as, you know, I woke up with this idea or anything like that. But what it came to me more based on an active observation. Is something that, you know, during that time, it was me actively looking for ways to help. So, like I mentioned, Serum was founded, you know, during the start of MCO. When during the start of MCO, you if you remember, right, a lot of people were heavily affected to the point that a lot of them lost their jobs, lost their income, especially with the vulnerable groups, like I mentioned, refugees or rural poor, urban poor, right? And many of them didn't even have the money to provide for food on their table. And during that time, we saw it as a dire need to provide things like, you know, food supplies and all. And a lot of NGOs are doing really, really great job in providing these supplies to support them during this tough time. But when I was trying my best to help them on the end as well, I was sitting down and trying to think, you know, there seems to be like a missing puzzle in this. There seems to be like a gap. When I dig deeper, then I realized that one of the gaps is that most of the groups that we are empowering, you know, providing food supplies and so on, they do not have access to, you know, hygiene supplies like face masks and hand sanitizers. And one of the major reasons is because of the, for example, logistical barrier and also financial barrier. Imagine when there are families that can't even provide food for the whole day, you know, they are starving for maybe a couple of days, or some of them only have rice and ketchup for their meal for the whole family, right? And having hygiene kits, hygiene supplies would be their secondary or even tertiary priority. And, you know, during the time, one of the thoughts that came across my mind was that it is so unfair in this scene, because I believe that everyone should have an equal chance of preventing COVID-19 outbreak. And when it comes to communities, especially urban poor, when living in condensed, like the very dense population, the risk of outbreak is higher than the others when they don't have hygiene kits, right? Hence, that's why I was thinking, like, okay, why not I start a one-off initiative just to help out the communities that I'm in touch with? And I did that. And what happened after that was that after providing the supplies, after interacting with more NGOs and communities, more and more of them actually approached me and request for help. And that's where I realized the situation on the ground was actually worse than I thought. Hence, that's why I continue it as rather than one-off initiative, I wanted to continue it as a non-profit organization. And hence, that's why, you know, we continue onwards from that, trying to provide more and more. And every month we fundraise as well. And then next comes to the question, how do I involve more youths in this equation? That's why we recruited, youths to be our fundraisers. We upskill them, we partner with NGO Hub to upskill them with fundraising skills. And then they fundraise. And then all the money that we gathered from there, all channeled into providing face masks and hand sanitizer for those in need. Then along the way as well, we when we went on the ground, we hear a lot of like heartbreaking stories. For example, one of the principal in the refugee center, right? I saw, you know, their face mask, their disposable face mask is so thin that I can see through it. And I was very curious. I asked, you know, why? And she said that, you know, simply because she doesn't have the money to purchase disposable face masks. Hence, she actually had to wash the face mask again and again until the point it got so thin and it's actually like semi-transparent. And it's just really heartbreaking. And imagine if you hear that from a community that you are engaging with face-to-face, you know, that really keeps you up at night. Hence, that's why we're constantly trying to, you know, see what else we can do more for them. Hence, that's why we start fundraising, providing these supplies. And we realize at the same time providing these hygiene kits, it also allowed them to start going back to work, start reopening their education center and economic center for example, for refugees to start working again. Right now, what we're expanding into is that after realizing hygiene kits is really important for them, but at the same time, many of, for example, refugee artisans lost their revenue stream because this pandemic has caused them not being able to, you know, open a store or shop or a booth, which they highly dependent on physical interaction in order to close sales. Hence, right now, we are trying to say that how can we be a platform to help them to sell their product online? How do we can we make them put them into the equation of e-commerce as well? And yeah, hopefully in the future, we can even upskill them to be online entrepreneurs with us as well. So that's how, you know, it doesn't just happen just like that. It takes like step by step and, you know, really engage with the community, iteration, coming up with new strategy, getting more people involved. And then, yeah, it comes to, well, becomes what it is right now. And yeah, I'm really glad that right now we are still growing after, you know, impacting more than 19,000 people. And then we are still growing, getting more stakeholders involved. And yeah, there's something definitely I'm very proud of and something that also keep me very much humbled as well.
I mean, like, yeah, wow. I mean, you guys are doing really amazing job. And yeah, thank you for doing all the work that you're doing. And please continue to do all this great work that you're doing. A question I want to ask is, sorry, this is actually not in the notes, but hearing your explanation, I just wanted to know, how many people, you know, do you actually have in, like, basically, like, your core team, other than the youth volunteers that help you for the fundraisers, right? I mean, like, how many people do you actually have in your core team to make all of this happen?
Yep. So in terms of, let's say, talk about fundraisers, and we actually have more than 150 youths who join force, and then actually all of them, some of them even from other countries, so across 5 different countries as well. Mm-hmm. So they all really contributed very well in terms of fundraising to support our initiative. In terms of where, you know, the organization as a whole, just 2 weeks ago, we were only having 7 people. So it was started off as 3 of us as co-founders, me, Audrey, and Ning. And after that, we grew a little bit more into 7 people just 2 weeks ago. And I think last week we had our recruitment drive, and then right now we have 16 people. Yeah, so that's like we suddenly just grow like double in size.
I guess you guys are still trying your best to grow and grow and grow. I mean, like,
what? Yes, definitely.
what makes it so inspiring is that you started this with 3 people, and I'm like, oh my God, like, how did you guys do that?
Yeah, because it's very much possible at this like digital age, right? So yeah, that's very much possible.
Like, no, I mean, like, no, I'm really, really impressed, because like I still remember when I started the Samba Pod, it was me alone for like whole 2 months before I started, you know, having new people and all, right? So basically, like, you know, even to just do a podcast, I'm not even, you know, I haven't even like turun pandang or do those kind of like, you know, a direct engagement with people, just like having a social media and a podcast alone for like one person, I was feeling the strain, man. So I don't know how did you guys manage to do all of that with just like 3 people. So yeah, I'm just super impressed. I'm like, wow. We're like, wow.
Thank you.
Like, you guys are amazing, and yeah, please continue doing this amazing work you're doing. So yes, let's go on to social entrepreneurship. Yeah, guys, that was a bit about, you know, the amazing work that they're doing at Serum. And to know more about what they're doing, you can go check on their, for me, I only know your Instagram page. Where are you guys also on?
So on Instagram is serum.initiative. We are on Facebook as well. Just search Serum Initiative. Or you can go to our website as well. So it's seruminitiative.com. So yeah, so all those channels, you'll be able to see all the work that we've been doing. We update on a weekly basis as well, even our on-the-ground engagement and all this, right? So yeah, you'll be able to have a little bit like sneak peek there.
I kind of like your Christmas package. I'm not sure what's the exact name, but that idea, I really loved it. I felt that was really impactful.
Yeah, right now just now you reminded me, we are also on Shopee and Lazada. If let's say you are interested in purchasing impact-driven products, feel free to search. You can go to our social media and then all the links, all the channels, you know, to Lazada and Shopee, it's all there. So yeah, feel free to check it out. The Christmas pack, yeah, recently we just launched it, and surprisingly, you know, a lot of support that we are receiving, and we really feel the love. How, you know, we are receiving the love from our customers, the customers also receiving their love from our like Christmas vibe. Christmas pack, right? So that's great.
yeah, you guys are like doing amazing. I mean, like, I still don't know how you guys do it, but yeah, it's really, you know, it's really inspiring, to be honest. So yeah, okay, so going on to this to the main segment, which is about social entrepreneurship, right? Which is basically, for me, I'm really clueless about, you know, about this whole term. What does this actually mean? So yeah, the first question is going to be, how is it different than, you know, other entrepreneurships, other businesses?
Yeah, so I guess we can like kind of, in this case, we classify a little bit different, like maybe social entrepreneurship, maybe compared to conventional businesses, right? So in the shortest way saying it is that social entrepreneurship is just like any other businesses. It's just that, you know, social enterprises, business model or operation has a clear social environmental impact integrated within it. So if I were to give you like a, let's say, how do we gauge this, right? Let's put like a line. On the left is NGO, non-profit, non-government organization in kind of like structure, right? Okay. On the other end, on the right, you can think of it as conventional business, profit-driven, all about financial performance and so on, right? So social enterprise is somewhat like in between of these two elements, between NGO and also conventional business. Meaning that, you know, to us, profitability, you know, financial performance is important. At the same time, the social impact or environmental impact is also equally important. So how do we actually get these two elements into the equation at the same time? In a way, it's somewhat like, you know, managing two forms of entity at once in one structure. I mean, I can give an example, right? So for example, let's say you want to open a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. So if a typical coffee shop is a conventional business, you know, you're selling coffee, making profit, right? But if you want to be a social enterprise, so one of the examples could be that, you know, your coffee shop only employs differently abled community, or maybe your coffee shop only employs refugees. So that's where, you know, it becomes a clear idea saying that, hey, you're not just running business, but within your business itself, there's a very clear social environmental impact that you have within the equation. So that's one of the examples that, yeah, definitely can give you to give a clearer idea.
Okay, basically it's safe to say that like you say, it's really in between. It's really in between, but then basically it's something like a regular entrepreneurship, but then the difference is you see more impact towards the society and your community. Am I wrong?
Yeah, so in a way you can also see like this, right? So let's say, you know, you can argue that some conventional business, they have CSR initiatives to help people, right? So they call themselves social enterprise. Mm. But typically, social enterprise model is largely different in the way that we will say that if your financial performance grow, your impact grow at the same time. So for example, for that coffee shop, if let's say your coffee shop grows and then you maybe earn more, so you can either actually pay the differently abled communities better as employees, or if you open another branch, you get to employ more more refugees or more differently abled communities, right? Mm. So that one is like, you know, the equation is included within it. The more you grow on financial, the more you also grow in terms of impact in a very, very clear manner. So for CSR, it really depends on, hey, I do run all my businesses, what's the leftover amount that I can get so that I can make impact with it and also get tax exemption from it. So the purpose and also, you know, how it evolves and integrate within your business model is very much different in that equation.
Okay. Basically, it can be like a whole different thing by its own depending on the business model. Okay, understood. Mm. Okay, so yes, thank you for the explanation. And going on to the next question is, do you agree that social entrepreneurship is like this common trend that is done by many like startups at the initial phase? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, social entrepreneurship is kind of growing. The trend is kind of growing. But if you were to say that many startups actually start off as social enterprise, for me, in my opinion, not really that much. Mm-hmm. There's more to be done. You did mention, you know, before this, saying that you do see quite a number of youths mm-hmm. are getting more and more involved in social entrepreneurship, which is pretty true. One of the main reasons for that is because, I guess, in a way, a lot of youths are more, you know, relatable towards like social impact, towards SDG. They are more socially conscious. Hence, social entrepreneurship is something that tap into their interest more. Hence, if they were to go into entrepreneurship, social entrepreneurship could be something that, you know, very much catch their interest in a way, right? So, mm-hmm. yeah. So that's why if you talk about, let's say, if the startup ecosystem as a whole, social enterprise is growing, yes. But to be honest, there's a lot more to be done. There's a lot more elements that we can actually push more for more startups actually adopt the social entrepreneurship model. Because if you really think about it, any sort of business could be a social enterprise if you change your business model to involve a social environmental impact in it. But of course, ultimately, it really depends on whether, for example, the founders or the companies itself, whether this is their vision or not, whether they actually want this or not. If they actually are not inclined to making social environmental impact in this form, it's totally fine. If they want to go to conventional business, there's no problem with it. It really depends on your personal interest and how that you feel like, you know, how it relates to you, or even perhaps potentially the future market, maybe social enterprise will be more common and more people would actually like this or not. Maybe the trend will grow more, hence you want to jump in right now. So it really depends on how you look at it.
Okay, but oh yeah, so I guess it is true. I feel like maybe it's because youths nowadays are more conscious about their surroundings. I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not going to compare and say how is it with the Gen Y or the boomers, because I really don't know, okay? And no, because if I say that, then people might say that I'm being too biased towards the Gen Z because I'm one of them. I don't know, so I don't want to comment about that. But then, yeah, maybe because of the presence of social media and all, I think youths are becoming more conscious about their surroundings, be it, like, you know, through social or even through environment and stuff. And yeah, I feel like even the SDGs that you were talking about, right, the Sustainable Development Goals, which is this idea planned by United Nations, I feel like it really gets more support from the youths. I mean, speaking from someone who works with one of the UN organizations before, and yeah, I really feel that the youths are the ones playing a lot of vital roles. You know, I'm not saying that the adults are not doing anything. I mean, please don't get me wrong. But yeah, I mean, like, it does show that the youths are playing really, really active roles. So I guess that's a positive note for all of us.
Yep, exactly. I mean, if you really listen to... So previously, I actually had the chance to have a like online session to learn from Mark Cuban, which is one of the billionaire, you know, one of the Shark Tank, you know, one of the sharks on Shark Tank. And he did mention to you know, that all the SMEs or all the business or entrepreneurs in that session, right, saying that, you know, every entrepreneur should really look into social impact, because the younger generation, right, whether it's Gen Y, Gen Z, they are more socially conscious, and they tend to only want to relate to your brand if you have a certain level of social impact within it. Hence, they would like you more, and they want to be more likely to be loyal to your brand or to your product if you have that element. So it's not something that, you know, just said by random people. It's something that a lot of articles, a lot of researchers also mentioned how younger generation are more and more socially conscious. And even, you know, business leaders like Mark Cuban also mentioned that as well. So yeah, I think rather than saying that I said it or you said it, I'm just going to throw in like Mark Cuban said it. So yeah. If you want to score, if you decide to score Mark Cuban, so I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, going on to the next question is... obviously, I could see, you know, your passion on, you know, in basically how conscious you are towards the society and also the communities around you, right? But I'm still going to ask this question. It's like, why did you really decide on social entrepreneurship? And yeah, are you planning, I think you have already explained a bit about this just now, but I'm just going to ask it again. Are you planning to like expand Serum to be something more than that, something more than a social entrepreneurship? Like, I don't know. So like, yeah, do share with us your thoughts.
I think first part, right, you know, why did I decide to, you know, venture into social entrepreneurship? For someone like me, which is fully like engineering background, so I did mechanical engineering back in my degree. And for me, during the time, even though I have engineering background, but I'm really fascinated about entrepreneurship and also social impact. you know, during that time, even when I was a university student, I was still actively involved in social impact scene. Even when I was like the president of the debate club back in my university, UPM, University of Putra Malaysia, I gave a lot of like free debate or public speaking classes towards the students as well. Because like for me during that time, the involvement in social impact or, you know, contributing back, right, it was something really fulfilling to me. Hence, I was actively involved. So when at the aspect I was interested in entrepreneurship to explore more about that, when I have zero knowledge about it since I was from, like I mentioned, engineering background. Okay. On the other end, I'm very interested in, you know, making an impact, helping people. And when I was first introduced about the term social entrepreneurship, that definitely really intrigued me. Like the idea of integrating both entrepreneurship and also social impact and helping people, right? That is like perfectly fits into what I'm passionate about, even before I know about social entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. Hence, that's why I like when I heard about it, I was like, okay, I'm going to jump into it. So I just jumped into it and then start involving more and more and more, like pretty much a gung-ho into it, right? So yeah, that's why I think why I decided on it is, I guess, personally, the passion itself. And I just love the whole process itself. The fact that I'm not just simply out there trying to like earn money and trying to sell things, but I am very clear about how I'm also, you know, making a very clear and transparent impact while doing going through this process. So it's more than just money, but, you know, also a greater purpose integrated within it. So I guess that's what got me really interested in social entrepreneurship. And I guess the next point is that, you know, are we planning to expand Serum, right? That's for sure. Right now, like I mentioned, you know, we started off aiming to provide hygiene kits only. Right now, other than providing that hygiene kits every month, we're also expanding into providing economic empowerment in the form of our buy and impact model, where we help the communities in need to sell their products online, right? So being the being like the e-commerce and helping them to sell on the end. But the next step that we're trying to, you know, evolve into is definitely how do we able to make sure that the communities themselves, right, are able to be self-sustainable. So for me, the real success case would be that if, let's say, Serum is just like disappear tomorrow, will the communities themselves be able to succeed as well? So I think that would be, if that's the answer to that is yes, then that would be a definition of success on my end. So hence, that's why what we're aiming to do in for our next step is that definitely upskill the communities like refugee artisans and so on with relevant online entrepreneur skill. So in a way is that they can sell their products online, whether it's through social media or from Lazada and or Shopee and so on. We equip them with the relevant infrastructure, whether it's internet access or, you know, digital devices. At the same time, also teach them the skills to sell it well, sell it like transparently as well. So I think that's definitely the next step. And the future, in the future, we really hope to be a platform that, you know, Serum become a platform for buy and impact, where every single customer, just like how you go to Shopee and Lazada, but now you come to Serum, our platform, every purchase that you make here, there's always a very clear and transparent impact behind each of the purchases that you make. And then we have like very transparently inform you, oh, you purchased this and these are how much of money that you have, you know, impacted the communities, what have you provided in this extent, yada yada. So, you know, that kind of level of platform is something we really hope to strive to become. Of course, that one is like very future term. Our very next step is more of upskilling the communities themselves.
Okay, but honestly, I love the part where you said that you're very, very transparent, you know, so that the consumers, the customers know where is the money that they are investing in, where that the money actually goes to. So yeah, I really like that. Interesting. And yeah, I mean, like, listening to your points just now, just, you know, it really inspires me to see how, you know, how much you care about, you know, about all this, about your surroundings, basically. I think talking about debate and all, we share a lot of that in common as well. So, but I always thought that, you know, trying to give back, obviously giving back to society is something good, but I think I always had this kind of mindset, you know, thinking that I can only give back to society once, like, you know, once I actually have like legit money, once I've like work in this, like, you know, have like this super stable position, once I'm not like depending on my parents anymore. I always had that kind of like mindset. Only then can I start like, you know, giving back to the society. So yeah, what you were saying just kind of like opened up my mind a bit and like start, you know, I'm really pondering about so many points in my head right now.
Yeah, I think I would definitely add one more thing, because that point, right, it's not wrong to have that thought, to be honest. I think a lot of us have that barrier in our mind, and we don't know where to start. I think that's the biggest problem. And especially, you know, for youth, one of the things that we are severely lacking is definitely financial freedom. We definitely don't have the financial capacity to contribute, you know, significantly. So that's why every single time when I engage with youth and so on, right, I always say this thing is that, if you can't actually contribute financially, you don't have the capacity to contribute financially, you always have the capacity in many other forms. So for example, social media capacity, you know, for you to share, for you to support, for you to shout out for social enterprises products, for example, right? It takes zero cent from you, and yet you are still able to contribute a lot for them. Because what youths are really good at is our connection and our presence online. And that's our strength. And that's the strength that a lot of people, even we, especially we, our youth ourselves, right, we missed out about it. We didn't realize how much of power and how much of change that we can make with that strength. So yeah, I always say this to most of the youth that I come across, and you can definitely contribute in some way or the other. Just have to explore it.
Okay. Yeah, and actually, to all the listeners out there, what Shaikit said is like really, really true, because I think some of us really underestimate the power of social media, or some of us are more focused about the negative aspects of social media. So yeah, I mean, like, obviously everything has its pros and cons, like, you know, every human creation is like that. But then, yeah, maybe we should start trying to utilize our social media, you know, in order to contribute on this positive note. So yeah, this is something definitely for everyone to, like, you know, think about. Moving on to the next question. In your opinion, what are the pros and cons of social entrepreneurship?
All right. Yeah. I think I definitely need to be neutral about this. As much as I love social entrepreneurship, on this end, I really have to be transparent about it as well, right? Especially about the cons. So let's talk about the pros. The pros is definitely, if you have a social enterprise rather than a conventional business, your company culture definitely is different. Meaning that when your company culture is of your vision and mission, not just about making money and, you know, perhaps solving some pain points of the customers, but have a very clear idea about how you want to empower the underserved communities, the most vulnerable groups, right? So the company culture itself definitely is different. Company culture would define in many ways, right? You know, whether it's when your employees are working, they're more driven, or even for you yourself as a founder, you feel more driven and you get to engage with many layers of the communities on the ground. And that becomes a bigger and bigger drive for you to do more and more and more. So that itself is a company culture. I think that one would provide a very much positive note towards your organization as a whole. That's definitely one of the pros. And, you know, relating to that also, I think the second pros is that the talents that you're going to attract if you're a social enterprise is definitely people who are also equally or even more passionate in social impact itself. So the talents that you get involved, they are as much like of the passion and devoted to achieve this vision together with you, with your organization. So talents definitely is another point. I think another pros definitely is on your branding and marketing. So for example, if I were to place two products in front of you, let's say if both of them, like for example, this nasi lemak, both of them priced at 10 ringgit. But if I say that the dish on the left is just a normal plate by any big businesses that are going to make it, the dish on the right is produced by one of the B40 communities that we are empowering as well. So in that aspect, right, you're definitely more inclined to go to the ones that are making an impact rather than the one that just maybe profiting the big businesses only, right? So in terms of the branding and marketing for your product or for your company, definitely there's a pros into it. And lastly, the next one, right, definitely is also potentially able to have a big group of support, a big group of active supporter. So meaning that, let's say your customers believe in your social impact and buy into your product, most likely your customer will be the ones that will buy again and again from you if they really believe in you and they feel like your product makes sense. Not just on the impact side, but also the product quality itself, it makes sense, right? Of course, they want to buy from you again and again, right? Because the customers themselves also have the feel-good element. They feel like, I'm also contributing towards good by just simply purchasing products from you. So I think that's definitely getting supportive, active customer. That's another end. I think the last part that I really want to mention, which is a little bit more of macro level, is about impact investing. Impact investing is where, you know, typical investment where people just, maybe it's VC or angel investors want to invest in you simply for the money gains from it, monetary gain from it.
Okay.
But right now, there's an increasing awareness about impact investing, where there are people who invest in you, not just wanting the money back, but also wanting to help you to see that what sort of impact you create. If I, let's say, invest 100,000 ringgit into you, after 5 years, how much of money you can generate back, at the same time, how much impact you are able to generate back. So that one, you can attract different form of investments into your business. So that, I think that's definitely one of the big points as well. And let's talk about coins right now, which is something that, like I said, I need to be transparent about, right? So just like I mentioned about impact investing, there's a pros, but the cons is also when you're associated in price, it might blur the lines about investment. Because one thing is that impact investing is still very new, especially in Malaysia, it's very, very new as well. So you might not find many pools of investment able to help you to build your business. That's one. Okay. Second is that most of the investors are still looking into monetary return. Hence, maybe the kind of like investors that you can look for, maybe it's going to be tougher. Because perhaps when a lot of cases, when you see perhaps investors listening, hearing that you're a social enterprise, most likely perhaps your profit margin or your return on investment maybe is lower than the conventional business, mm-hmm. I might and not to invest into you. So I think that blurs the line for investment part. So that's definitely one of the cons potentially. Second is definitely in terms of costing, because if I were to observe the market, many, many times is that perhaps the product that's sold by social enterprise, the price might be a little bit higher because they want to be ethical, for example, in terms of paying the communities. They don't want to underpay them. They don't want to have like modern slavery in them. They want to make sure all the process to be highly ethical. And a lot of cases, if you want to ensure that, it comes with a financial cost to it as well. So maybe the costing itself might be higher, perhaps your profit margin might be lower, or your price might have to be higher. So I think that's definitely one of the cons that potentially rise. And the last one definitely is in terms of like operation management. Because like I mentioned, right, social enterprise is like managing two entities, like NGO and conventional business at once. Because you have to manage in terms where your profitability, your financial gains is there, is healthy. At the same time, you also have to ensure the impact they are creating is transparent and clear and also positive as well. So as much as I know you put a lot of like devotion into it, of course, everyone is very much passionate and devoted into it, but potentially the kind of focus space that you have to devote some of it towards the impact making as well. Hence, you know, the operation management might be a little bit more difficult. Of course, it differs from case to case, from business to business, from social enterprise to social enterprise. But these are like the general kind of like pros and cons I can give for now.
Okay, okay. You know, talking about the cons, and it's always like, oh, money is always a problem, right? But yeah, I kind of like understand, you know, what you were trying to say just now. But yeah, I feel like that, well, no, your points just made it very clear. And like, I think it kind of like, unblur the lines that people have when it comes to like social entrepreneurship and all the conventional businesses. So yeah, I think that's a very good point. Thank you. Moving on to the next question is, what were your challenges when you started Serum Initiative?
So what were the challenges I faced, I guess, at the initial point, right?
Yeah.
I think the first that I can like came across my mind is definitely in terms of manpower and awareness from the public. Manpower, of course, because the things that we want to do when we started off is just 3%. That's not just for social enterprise or for Serum, but for just a general business itself. Of course, it was tough, or even for NGO or initiative, it was definitely tough. But you know, we were definitely happily doing it, right? So definitely no complaints about it. But of course, if there were more manpower, a lot of things could have been done in a larger scale in the earlier stage, of course. Another thing, one of the challenges also we face is in terms of awareness from the public. So for example, let's not talk about donation, but when it talks about purchases, we realize one of the trend in Malaysia is that when you compare in between, let's say, donation and purchasing a product that can make an impact, most of the Malaysian actually are more inclined to move towards donation. Where, you know, even if they understand if I purchase this product, there's still impact behind it, but they still always more likely to opt into donation. One of the thing is that perhaps, you know, a lot of us are still, you know, talking about it in the social impact scene. One of the scenario perhaps is that we are not aware yet about impact-driven products or aware about social enterprises, where we are still very, when it comes to like, oh, we want to make a change, we want to help people, our mindset is still very much inclined to donation. So I guess that's where, you know, the rise of social enterprise at the same time also needs to have a rise of the awareness towards the presence of social enterprise in their products, so that the public, right, wouldn't just want to donate money, but they can think that there's an alternative for me to help people as well, which is purchasing products from social enterprises. And there were chances where even purchasing from social enterprises, perhaps the impact could be even more sustainable and even more long-term, right? So I think that's where the public, the awareness from public is something that we really hope that more Malaysians are more aware about as well. But of course, looking at, you know, this pandemic, right, it has actually made not just Malaysians, but people all across the world, our empathy has been growing a lot. We are more and more like empathetic towards the vulnerable groups. We are more and more likely wanting to help people as well. I think that's a really, really good sign. It's just right now that we need to involve them. Just not only donation, there's another alternative for you as well. So yeah, I think the education part is definitely something that, you know, we wish it was there. If not, you know, we wouldn't face this challenge. And of course, lastly, I guess other manpower and awareness from public, resource constraint is definitely one. You know, considering that for Serum, we actually started this whole initiative towards social enterprise, right, with almost no capital investment into it, meaning that we didn't really put money into it. We grew everything from scratch, like from ground zero. Considering we grew from there until where we are now, of course, I'm really satisfied how it went about. But if we have more resources, of course, there's a lot more things that we could have done. I think that's just the same for every single businesses and every single startups out there as well.
Okay. It's very interesting to say. I mean, I think that is very common, because I think people are more familiar, they're more comfortable with the idea of giving donations, you know, compared to social entrepreneurship. And also maybe they're worried about the transparency. I don't know, this is just like my opinion as a very clueless consumer. Maybe they're worried about the transparency, whether the proceeds are really going to impact the people, or like, are you guys going to take it? Maybe some people have those kind of thoughts as well. So what you said, you know, we need to have more awareness. But I think it will grow as time goes on.
Yeah, because like when it comes to social impact making kind of scenarios, right, if the customer have a certain doubt, it creates a barrier. And when there's a barrier, there will be doubt, they'll be doubtful to actually put the money out, especially when you mention about transparency. Because I think we are getting too used to the idea that when it comes to businesses, like we even have the saying money is a root of all evil. At the same time, when we talk about businesses, it's all about profit making and being rich. But social entrepreneurship, this kind of mindset is so new to them. When you tell them that, hey, we are running a business, when you buy from us, it makes an impact from it. When you have those kind of doubt, in comparison to saying that, oh, these organizations are non-profit. Of course, you know, that might, the lack of awareness will get them more inclined to donation, which is understandable. But I think one of the things that I really want to point out is that, of course, a lot of NGOs still need to depend on donation. Even some social enterprises need to depend on donation. And it's definitely legit. But one of the things is that, one of the perspectives you can think about, perhaps when it comes to donation, it might not be sustainable. It might be a one-off donation, and you know, it might use for another 3 months, for example, then after that, there's no more. But if you were to invest into a social enterprise, right, for example, a social enterprise run in the form of a business, meaning that when you support their business, they will, if they have enough capital, they will find ways to be self-sustainable. So meaning they're running business, they're not out there keep asking for donation every single year. But right now they're running business, and if there's more and more business transaction happening, their impact and their financial both ends can be self-sustainable. That's definitely the best case scenario. So if we were to think in that way, then you might think that, hey, the social enterprise model might be more sustainable for certain cases as well.
Okay, interesting. So this is going to be the last question of the segment before we go on to another segment. I think you've already spoke about this earlier, but then I just want to know if you have any other things to add about the difference of environment when it comes to the social entrepreneurship and, you know, the traditional corporate environment.
Yeah, I think I mentioned a little bit about corporate culture. Right? I think that's one of the biggest. But of course, I just also want to point out is that a lot of corporate companies or conventional businesses, they do have great culture and environment still. I think the major difference here is that in terms of the vision, on both ends, it might be differ a lot. So for example, for let's say typical corporate companies, what they really aim to do here is that they want to solve a pain point of a customer, or they want to change the industry. So for example, Amazon, they are really, really customer centric. They want to solve every single thing every single pain point for the customer. Hence, that's why they're expanding to so many services. So their focus point is a lot on their customer, want to be on their customer to get the best and then be fully satisfied. For social enterprise, we also want to solve pain points. But right now, I guess what's different is that we are very clear in terms of placing of our profit and social environmental impact on this one equation as a whole from the get-go. And at the same time, right, the kind of pain point that we are solving is more related towards social issues, for example, or environmental issue. We do consider a lot about our customer as well. But when it comes to our vision, right, we focus a lot on the social and environmental issue on the ground itself, or of its fundamental itself. So I guess that's where it could be very much different when you compare to social enterprise and traditional corporate environment.
Okay, cool. That's interesting. So yeah, that's a bit about social entrepreneurship. To even talk more about it, I think we can go on all night, but that's the problem. I mean, we have this thing called time constraints. So
yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like I'm very, very interested in all you're saying. I wanted to ask more and more stuff, but then I feel that this is a very, very good intro. You know, it's like barely a scratch, on the surface of social entrepreneurship. But, I guess this is a very, very good intro for all the listeners out there who are like me, very, very new to this term, So I think it gives them more motivation, at least more drive for them to like do their own research more for those who are really, really interested. So moving on to the next segment where we're going to talk about, Gen Z and entrepreneurs. This question is like, This is a very interesting question that I feel that I really want you to answer. This is that, do you think we have it easy to be in the social entrepreneurship in this modernistic world?
Yep, I think in general we are at the era where for you to be to start a business or to be an entrepreneur is easier than ever right now. And it's really great to see there's more and more awareness and interest when it comes to entrepreneurship. A lot of us do ask the question at the current pandemic era, right? Mm-hmm. What's the balance between like finding a job or starting a business, especially for youth, especially for fresh grad, right? A lot of us feel like I want to start a business, but right now during this pandemic, so many businesses are closing down. Is it a great time for me to start a business? And at the same time, it's also hard for me to find a job at the same time for employment. So a very general note is that both are generally tougher right now. But one thing I about entrepreneurship that I really want to highlight is that I'm really happy for the fact that there's increase of interest in terms of social entrepreneurship among youths in general. But I also want to highlight that there's one of the issues that I have seen in the market is that we always have this narrative on the extreme ends on entrepreneurship when it comes to our journey. So what I mean by this is that, on the extreme ends is that on one end, many people feel like starting a business is just too tough. And for example, I'm not born to be a founder. I'm not born to be an entrepreneur. So I'm not going to do it at all. So I think, of course, the fact is that, no one is born as an entrepreneur. Everyone is built to be one. So I think that's on one end is that a lot of people not inclined to step into it because they have this narrative that it's just impossible for them. They are not born for it. But on the other end, also, I see an issue is that a lot of people are starting to jump into entrepreneurship, especially the younger generation, because it somehow is like the cool thing to do right now. But a lot of them are really not informed about what the process might be like, or even knowledge that you should equip yourself with before you jumping into this ship, right? Okay. Like for example, right? So a lot of them, they go into entrepreneurship. When I asked them, for example, when I was mentoring some of them, I was asking like, oh, so why are you doing this? I asked them the question, why? And a lot of them say that, because I see my friend doing it. I want to be rich. And I'm like, that's not really the real answer to the why. And for you to not understand the why of you joining entrepreneurship journey is really detrimental. Because for you to, go through this journey, right, to succeed in this journey, there's a lot of grit and adaptability that you have, to equip to build a business. And if you don't have that, you might just wake up in the middle of the night and just ask yourself, why the hell am I doing this? And then that question, if you don't really have the real reason why you want to do it, you will immediately just, forget about it, you give up on it, and then you just move on. So which is why I feel like that kind of, the question on why you want to do it in the first place is very much important. And, you know, I guess one of the good things when it comes to this journey is that compared to entrepreneurship, to social entrepreneurship, at the very least, if you were to jump into social entrepreneurship, it makes you to question the why in the first place, in the beginning of your journey. So for example, social entrepreneurship, you will need to have a clear social impact in it. So when you talk about social impact, when you're planning about your business in the first place, maybe before this you saw it's cool, you want to jump in. But when you start planning about it, when you have a social impact element in it, maybe that's where you get you to question yourself again. Hey, this is social impact. Am I really passionate into it? Am I willing to be on the ground to engage with the communities? How do I feel when I engage with them and able to help them? Does it become a drive for me to do more? So I guess it becomes an extra element for people to want to involve in social entrepreneurship, to question the why again. And perhaps that's where it becomes more interesting and it becomes a better filtering for us to involve in this scene.
Okay. I mean, I think I'm not really shocked when you told me that some people are doing it because it's like the cool thing to do, because I feel that, yeah, I think a lot of us among the youths are really guilty of that. You do it because of your friend, you do it because of your social circle, that kind of thing, right? But yeah, I mean, like, what if like one day you suddenly realize you're not happy doing it, then you're just going to like let all your time and effort just go to a drain. So yeah, that's something everyone should think about, to be honest.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for bringing that point.
You should like solve this when you're starting it, not like in the middle of everything that you already put your effort in, then you only start questioning, wait, why am I here in the first place, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's great for you to ask in the first place.
Okay. So this is the last question of this segment. It's going to be, what attribute do any individual need to possess, you know, just to be like, to be a successful entrepreneur, or not even not a successful entrepreneur, just like, you know, a good quality entrepreneur lah?
Yeah, I guess I'm not the one to set the clear rule of what you should have and what you should not have in general, but at least in my opinion, right, I think I mentioned this a little bit, greed and flexibility is very much needed in this. Right now, you know, not just we are in the digital era, but right now it's in the pandemic era as well. The kind of market, the scene is really changing very, very fast. And for right now, even in the current scene, right, for those businesses which exist in the market for years or for decades, many of them actually have to close down. A lot of cases is because they don't have the adaptability to survive and prosper in this market. Hence, that's why I think right now is more important than ever for us to not just have the grit, but the flexibility and the adaptability to have the ability to navigate through the market. And that's where I believe that it all ties down to your ability to learn fast. Like a lot of us go to university and go learn about, you know, courses and all these things, right? We just told to learn, but we never really look into the factor that have we learned how to learn in the first place? Like I always have this perspective when it comes to learning a new knowledge, right? Is that you can try to learn as much as possible. But for example, if you learn that the way you're learning it, your ability to learn it fast or your ability to learn it well is not good, you may want to learn 100 things, but because of your process is bad, you only can like retain about 20% of them. But if you know the ability how to learn, you have the ability to learn better. That's where if you just learn 50 things and then ultimately you have 100% of retention of what you learn, ultimately you get 50 of the new things to be remain. So the ability to learn fast, the ability to learn well, I think that's very, very much important. Not like it's very much important for entrepreneurs in general, of course. But I think even for us, let's say you are in the employment market, just an individual in general is more important than ever right now. And I guess, you know, evolving from there, right, after that, another point of wanting to be like a good or even successful entrepreneur, definitely you would need to have the charisma and empathy. The charisma, of course, is to inspire people to join your journey, whether it's employees or whether it's your customers, to influence them in a positive manner. Of course, you not influence them to do negative things, right? Mm-hmm. So the ability to charm them, to influence people, definitely is very important as an entrepreneur. And why empathy also, I believe, is very important is because that's where you get to understand the pain point of your customer. And if you are a social entrepreneur, you get understand the pain point of the underserved communities better. Then only you will be able to provide a solution that's loved by your consumers, that's loved by your community. And that's very much important for you to be in this market.
Okay. The point that when you said we need to like relearn how to learn, that part really got me. I was like, wait, what? I mean, yeah, that really shows. Yeah, actually what you said is really, really true. And, you know, it makes perfect sense. You can learn a lot of things, you know, you can, like, I don't know, like read the entire library. But then if you don't really know how to learn those kind of knowledge properly, then yeah, it's still not going to be, you know, you're not going to get the results that you want. So yeah.
Yeah, it's wasted. Yeah.
So yeah. I think like I think that is something everyone need to think about too. Wow, you're giving a lot of thought provoking points today. Good.
I hope like it doesn't like confuse people more and more after this podcast, right? Yeah.
No lah, I don't think you're confusing anyone. It's just that you're doing I kind of understand why Syrup Initiative is doing really great work, even though you guys started like a few months ago. You know, you guys only started this year in April, right? So it kind of shows why it is doing so well, because you know they have amazing people like you who are like really studying and thinking, you know, about how to make this genuinely happen. So yeah, that's something really inspiring for me. I have no other words to use other than inspiring, to be honest. I mean, like, I'm really awestruck here. So like, yeah, you know, really glad to actually have you on this episode. So yeah, thank you so much for coming.
huge credits to my team members as well, definitely. They are also the ones who inspired me, who also taught me to think about all these things, to have deeper understanding with this. So all of us are always like asking about this question, you know, thinking about these things together as well. So yeah, having this great team, hence that's why we get to evolve quick as well.
Wow. Give my regards to your team and tell them how amazing they all are.
because
you guys are really doing great work. So yes, to move on to the final takeaway, I mean, like, I'm really sad for one to actually have this podcast session to an end, but then yeah, you know, time constraints and all. So yeah, the final takeaway, the question is going to be, what's the last advice that you want to give to the public out there?
Yep, I think generally I want to focus a little bit more on social entrepreneurship, because that's really something I truly believe in. What I believe is that social entrepreneurship will continue to grow. And I believe that it's really a great time for you, especially in Malaysia, for you to ride along the wave. For example, you know, right now Malaysia recently just introduced the social enterprise accreditation, where we are one of the very few countries in the whole wide world that have a clear structure about how your company can register as a social enterprise. Many other countries out there, when I went to US to Rhode Island, a lot of them actually still don't have a clear structure when it comes to social entrepreneurship. A lot of them are like self-proclaimed. But right now in Malaysia, we have a clear structure with MAGIC, and we have like 3 levels of accreditation, and then you get benefits if you go on a higher level. Like you just have to fit like one of the 4 criteria. So one of the example, for example, if 51% of your workforce is from the target beneficiary groups, like, for example, like I mentioned, differently abled communities or refugee communities and so on, right? If 51% of the workforce is from the targeted beneficiary group, then you can start registering yourself as a social enterprise. Then there are 3 other criteria, like 35% of business cost is channeled into providing like training and upskilling for them, or 35% of production raw material is used to achieve environmental mission and so on. So I think feel free to explore into that, because like I mentioned, the community is growing, and the kind of structure we are growing in Malaysia as well. And understanding the structure is definitely the first step. After this, do explore your interests and see if this model is something that you really want to try out. And just explore first. You don't really have to jump right into social entrepreneurship and give up on everything. I would highly encourage you to either like study as a side gig or join other social enterprises to contribute and learn. And even if you don't have the capacity to involve in social enterprise scene right now, you can start as a consumer. You can start, you know, allocating some space on exploring to purchase from them, or even, you know, start shouting out for them on social media. There are many, many ways for you to actually be involved in this equation. It's really up to you whether you want to or not.
Okay. So yeah, basically, just try to study as a passion project first and then see how it goes, is it?
Yep, you can study as passion project, or you can explore. For example, you can look at Serum, what you're doing. If you're interested, do explore the means to actually partner with them or work together with us. I think a lot of social enterprises are looking for talents. So there's a huge space for you to be involved.
Okay. That sounds really interesting. Okay, so the last question, I mean, sadly for me, but the last question, the last question is going to be, you know, what is the sambal of the episode? So yeah, I'm not sure whether you were you were really surprised by this question or what. But basically, you know, like our name, the Sambal Pot, one of the main reasons why I named this podcast the Sambal Pot is because sambal is really spicy. And as someone who doesn't really enjoy spiciness, I do believe that sometimes we do need to have, like, you know, spicy kind of talks to, like, give you the impact. So basically, I know I want to hear your thoughts. What do you feel is, like, you know, the ultimate takeaway, the sambal of this whole episode?
Yep. I think I'm going to, like, focus this to those out there, especially youths who don't know where to start, who are really having the empathy and hope to do something to help the society as a whole, but don't know where to start. I just want to say that, you know, the ultimate takeaway from all these things is that there's always a way for you to involve in impact making or even in social entrepreneurship. You know, during this pandemic or even post-pandemic, the empathy among us will grow, not just among us within the youth, but just everyone in general. Hence, it's really a great time for you to explore ways to provide a means for everyone to channel our empathy into a social environmental impact. And perhaps, you know, social enterprise could be one of the channels that you can explore, or perhaps even NGOs and so on. But nonetheless, if you are really, really, like, lost and don't know where to start when you really want to, feel free to reach out to anyone in the same. Feel free to reach out to me as well. We would love to introduce you to ways to do it. So I think there are always people in the, especially in the social enterprise scene, we are heavily invested into social impact. When we see talents and youth are interested join this scene, we always want to help them to join this together as well.
I think you don't have to worry about that. After listening to this episode, not only the public, I'm also very interested to have further contacts in you about this whole thing. So we're saying that, thank you so much for all the advices you gave. It's like, you know, it's like this elder brother, you know, giving all these advices, saying that you have to do this, do that, do this, do that. So yeah, honestly, I really appreciate everything you said. Thank you so much. You don't have to worry about you speaking too much, because I felt that, you know, what you said was just nice, you know, honestly. And yeah, I just feel so whole and satisfied after having this episode. I mean, like, to be honest, I just feel so glad, lah, you know, to actually think of inviting you, because initially I was, like, super afraid to invite you. Oh, no worries, my listeners are very used to me being very real. So as this random 20-year-old kid who's still trying to, like, you know the meaning of confidence, I was very, very scared to invite you, because, you know, like, you know, obviously, you know, through social media and all, we look up to you so much. So we were like, are they even going to, like, come? No, honestly, I was like, is he even going to reply? Like, you know, don't waste our time, lah, that kind of stuff. But I'm really glad that we actually decided to take the leap. And yeah, I really enjoyed all the conversations. Thank you so much. And yeah, honestly, I feel that to whoever listening to this, you guys will obviously know a brand new definition of what social entrepreneurship really means. I think all the blurry lines were already cleared, you know, cleared beautifully by you. Thank you again. So yeah, thank you so much to all the listeners out there. Thank you so much, guys. And yeah, have a great start of 2021. And yeah, thank you so much.
Yep. Again. I hope this is a great way for you to start 2021. And yeah, thank you so much for having me. Oh, love this session. Really enjoy the process. Thank you.
Okay, so yeah. Okay, guys.